Hello, and welcome to the Beacon Group's Noon Step Meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Mitzi, and I am an alcoholic. In an effort to lessen distractions to others and to respect our speakers, you will not be able to unmute yourself during the meeting. Let's start this meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. AA Preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. This is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend, but we ask that only alcoholics participate. If you are new to AA or new to the Beacon Group, we strongly recommend home group membership and sponsorship. If you are new or not so new and looking for a sponsor, please put your name and number in the chat. If you have worked all 12 steps as outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, have had a spiritual experience or awakening, and are willing to sponsor, please also put your name and number in the chat. The chat will remain open during the meeting except while the speaker is sharing. Also in the chat, you will find our AA quote of the day. The quote source will always be from AA literature. Our speaker will share for 30 minutes on the step of the day, which I will time. Then we will split into breakout rooms for the small group discussion. Each group has a moderator who will divide the time equally and invite each person to share. Questions are encouraged during the sharing part of the meeting. When you share, please be sure your environment is quiet and free of distractions. Breakout room discussions end at 12:54, followed by day counts, announcements, and the Lord's Prayer. And I have asked Adrienne H. to read the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Thank you, Missy. My name's Adrienne, and I'm an alcoholic. And here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for letting me be of service.
Thank you so much, Adrienne. We appreciate you. Today, we will hear a talk on step one, which is we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Please give a warm welcome to Pat O. from Fullerton, California. Yay.
Yeah, thank you. My name is Pat. I'm an alcoholic. Grateful to be sober, grateful to be here. And it's good to see the three amigos, Chris, Alex, Reggie. I saw them last Wednesday at Pacific Group, and I get to be with you guys today again today. And lucky me, I told Alex I'm the luckiest guy in the group. And it's good to see my friends. Adrian, it's good to see you and my other friends that are here. Thank you, Sherry, for asking me to participate. And we're hooked up to my phone. So, but Sherry sent me a message to remind me. I was in Oklahoma this weekend, and I got a I got a message. Oh, you're speaking this morning. And I looked on my calendar. It said 11 a.m. And so I'm taking my 16-year-old to school this morning. And my calendar said 9 a.m. Well, work is an hour away. And I had about, I don't know, 61 minutes to make it on time. And I was, I didn't speed though. I promise. I did go in the carpool lane a couple times as a single driver. So, my 10 steps in action, I'm admitting it to the group. I will make amends and I'll act differently on the way home today. But, you know, I want to welcome our new friends to Alcoholics Anonymous. It's an honor and a privilege to be asked to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous and to be in the Zoom world. And, you know, is always touches my heart. To be honest with you, like I've gone so back and forth with my opinions but I tell you what, like, the blip in the radar that we had, you know, it's just like a whoop, you know, and get to be with you and get to see my friends from all over the world touches my heart every time. And I get to meet people that got sober on Zoom. And I just think, man, how amazing and how awesome. And it's just awesome. So it's good to be here. It's good to be sober. My sobriety date's October 23rd, 2002. And the powerlessness for me is I didn't know that was going to be my date. You know, the solution is that I was surrendered on that date. I didn't make a choice that this day I'm not going to drink. I called and asked for help and I made it through that whole day. And I was like, oh my God, I didn't drink today. Like, what the heck? You know what I mean? Like, I didn't drink today. Like, that was, to me, was, I was like, I was mind blown. I was like, whoa, holy cow. And then, and so I believe that was surrendered. So if you're new, you know, I want to welcome you. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. And in the step, there's actually a dash there that our lives have become manageable. And I'm not a scholar and I can't tear it apart. I'm not going to rip it apart. I'm just going to share you my experience with step one, because I think I struggled. Well, I can't say the most. I struggled with that step for so long. As my mom, you know, my mom was an alcoholic and so she was an Alcoholics Anonymous. So I was like, well, I'm not an alcoholic. You know, my mom's an alcoholic, you know, I'm not an alcoholic. An alcoholic pushes a shopping cart down the street, you know, and, well, I just had a friend and I put my stuff in his cart. You know, I justified my own alcoholism, you know, but, you know, I had all these, rationalizations and I justified and I minimized my drinking for so long and I was in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and I would come here and I would hear things that, you know, like I put the drink down and my life got better, you know. And for me, when I put the drink down, it seemed to me that my life got worse. I mean, you know, a restless, irritable and discontent that the big book talks about, like, I put booze down and I'm angry. You know what I mean? They're like restless, irritable, and discontent is, I mean, I'm, you know, I got that nervous disposition the big book talks about, and I have that self-centered mind, right? I get that nervous thing. And then I'm so self-centered. I'm wondering what you're thinking about me. And, you know, I sit around with my hands crossed like this, cause I don't want to bite my nails in front of you. You know, I have that self-centeredness to the, you know, but that restless, irritable and discontent is nothing's ever good enough. You know, I came off of Skid Row in downtown Los Angeles. And I would get to a point where I was living in a tent. I guess you could, I was surviving in a tent. There wasn't much living going on. I was surviving in a tent and I thought, man, those guys in those cardboard boxes, man, they got it bad. You know, I'm better than those guys. And then one day then some weeks I'm in a cardboard box thinking, man, one day I'll get a tent, you know, one day I'll be back in the tent, you know, and then eventually, like, there was no cardboard box. I maybe have like a cardboard blanket, you know, or getting all the paper, the newspapers, so I can have a blanket, you know, nothing was ever good enough in my world. I was just always, you know, my perception to life was skewed. It had been that way since I was a little boy. I mean, I grew up in AA, a lot of love. My mom provided everything I needed. I was an only child. I was spoiled. But my perception was that I wasn't loved. My perception was you had it better than me. My perception was all this stuff. So I've had that my whole life. Like, it just wasn't that way in the end. You know, I've always been just unease. It just, gosh, this is a horrible existence. And, you know, and for me, you know, the powerfulness of alcohol, you know, when I drank alcohol at 9 years old, it connected me to, it was just like the world opened up, you know what I mean? Like, it just seemed like I drank alcohol and the lens cleared and the dirt went away. And, all of a sudden it was like, yeah, this is amazing. Like, dude, this life thing, this is pretty awesome. And next thing you know, it was a party after a party after a party after a party. And there was nothing wrong with nothing. I mean, it was everything was wonderful. You know, everything was wonderful. I could seem to, if something were to happen, I'm like, yeah, no big deal. You know, dude, no big deals. It's all good. And alcohol became a solution, though I didn't know it. You know, I didn't know it. It was so powerful in me that it altered and changed the way I viewed, saw, felt, and lived life. And it connected me to a whole big world. And, you know, and as it progressed for me, it progressed to a point where I ended up on Skid Row, right? It ended up in this place where mom went to Al-Anon, so I couldn't manipulate mom anymore, you know? And I'm like, mom, I need some money. And she's like, no. I'm like, no. She's like, yeah, no's a full sentence. You know what I mean? I'm like, what? No's a full sentence. Like, what? And, you know, and I would say things like, mom, if I only had a dad, I wouldn't be in this situation. It's all your fault, you know? And my alcoholism, man, was just playing on my mom's feelings, you know? And I'd hit that guilt button. You know, that selfishness, man, you know, she would say things like she was going to set a boundary, you know, just stupid language that just made no sense. You know, it was like a roadblock in the manipulation, and my alcoholism masterminded itself. I mean, it was quick and it just, you know, just masterminded how to manipulate even more. And I would just break my heart, my mom's heart every day. And she would say things like, you know, Patrick, go to an AA meeting, you know? And I'm like, you know, I'd say, I'm not going to be patio son. They're going to know me at the AA meeting, you know? And I'd say just hurtful things like that. But I had to get the money. So I would go to the meeting and then it got to a point where I would go to the meetings, you know, I would hear things like, I got sober and I became the bank president, you know, and I'm thinking, oh, good for you, old guy. I don't want to be no bank president, you know? And I would separate myself from you and I would go there with drug addict problems. You know, anyone else go to AA with drug addict problems? You know, it's rough going to AA with drug addict problems, you know, cause you know, they're like, they don't want no addicts in their room, you know? But I can tell you at 17, when my mom, you know, she found a bag of weed and a bottle of alcohol in her house. And she was like, you can't drink in my house. Right. And my hearing was already way twisted, man. It heard like you need to hide it better. You know, like I was already like masterminding how I was going to continue to drink. My mind was already creating ways to manipulate to drink at 17. You know, mom kicked me out of the house. Well, no, that's a lie. I thought she kicked me out. What she said was she said, you can stay here and be sober, go out on the streets and get loaded, but you need to make a choice. And I heard at 17 that I was kicked out of the house, right? Like at 17, my alcoholism was already making decisions for me. Like I was already powerless over alcohol, though I couldn't see it at 17. And I didn't get here until I was 27. And the consequences of my alcoholism looked in the form of other things, drug addict problems, you know? And those were the reasons why I was homeless, right? Those were the reasons why I had a felony charge. Those were the reasons why, right? It was just the consequences of my alcoholism, those things. Because every time I went to jail, which was the only time I could stop, like I had to be literally removed from the substance in order to stop. Like I couldn't just like, you know, put alcohol down. What? Like that doesn't make any sense. Like no more alcohol, right? When I put alcohol in, right? Like I can't stop, right? I take the first drink takes a second, right? And we keep going, right? This idea of this physical allergy, this phenomenon of craving that the big book talks about, like I had to literally be removed, right? Because my mind would say, okay, someone may say, like, I would meet a girlfriend along the way. I don't know what she saw in the homeless guy, but she would bring me in, you know, and clean me up. And I would like fall in love right away. And then she's like, you know, you got to get a job. And I'm like, a job? Like, why? Like, aren't you going to pay the bills? You know, right. That's just how self-centered I am, you know, but I would get the job and, you know, and somewhere along the way, like 10 days, 15 days, 20 days, however many days, like all of a sudden my mind, right. Though my life is completely better. I go from living on the streets to living in an apartment to eating every day, gaining weight, feeling good on the inside, right? No program, right? Just physical sobriety. And then all of a sudden, somewhere along the way, like my mind's like, you know what, Pat? Like it's hot outside. Like, you know what I mean? Like that billboard of the Heineken, right? I'm like, oh my God, fucking Heineken. You know what I mean? And then next thing you know, like I'm on the beach and I'm sipping Heinekens, you know? And next thing you know, weeks later, I'm stealing vodka bottles or tequila bottles, right? To keep it going, to continue the party. And I don't understand that with a sober mind, right? Like everything's great. You know, there's no cloud on the horizon. Right. I got a beautiful life. It's all good. And I'm drunk, you know, and some days, like, my trauma would be triggered or my anxiety, you know, and I would make an excuse to why, you know, for a long time I would make an excuse. But at the end, what happened for me was that I got to a place where there was no excuses. Right. It got to a place where all of a sudden sober guys drunk. Right. And I'm like, whoa, how did this happen? Right. All of a sudden I'm 3 days later going, wait, what day is it? Right. All of a sudden, like, I'm coming to, sexually assaulted, coming to again, sexually assaulted, coming to again, over and over and over, thinking how the heck, and those things you know, to the normal person would go, I don't want that in my life. Right. The normal person goes, I'm good, right? Not me, right? The alcoholic minimizes, rationalizes, justifies, and says, oh, well, you know, do excuse. And so I'm living this life and I'm living this lie that's going on and I don't understand. And I'm getting to a place where I have no choice, whether to stop when I put it in or whether I have a choice with a sober mind. And I don't understand what's wrong with me, right? Like I'm not drinking for excuses or reasons, right? All of a sudden I'm just drunk. And I'm making promises to everybody in my life that I'm not going to drink and I'm drunk, right? And eventually all the people that are in my life are gone, right? And I can't blame it on them anymore. And I'm living on the streets and I don't know what's wrong with me. You know, I don't know what's wrong with me because I go to Alcoholics Anonymous and I'm hearing things that make no sense to me. Right. I'm hearing a lot about God and I don't believe in God. Right. If this is a God deal, like I'm out. Right. I don't want nothing to do with God. Right. You're saying God's a solution. I don't know what's wrong with me. You know, if I could just stop on my own power, like I would, like, I don't want this life anymore. You know, if I could just put the booze down, just don't drink one day at a time. You know, I drink no matter what. Right. You know, meeting makers make it. Well, I went to meetings and I was drunk, I would hear things that I would try to apply to my life. And I couldn't get sober. I couldn't stay sober. I felt like I was a lost cause. I felt like there was no hope for me. I started to become hopeless. I started to realize that I had no power on my own. Right. I had the best teachers in my life along the way. You know what I mean? My mom put all kinds of good, high profile AA members in my life. You know what I mean? Like she put the best of the best in front of me. And I wanted to do good. I wanted to do right. I would do what they told me to do, but eventually that thought would come and I'm drunk. And I'm thinking, wait a second. You know what I mean? Like, I thought, like, if I do X, Y, and Z, I would get dun, 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 right? And that just wasn't my experience. I did X, Y, and Z, and I got not that, you know? And so on the 20th of October of 2002, I crawled out of a motel, sexually assaulted for the 12th time. And, it wasn't any more of a bottom than the 11th time. It wasn't any more of a bottom than the 10th time. I knew I was going to be living this way forever. And that morning I had a spiritual defense. I mean, that's all I can, I can't, I don't know. It's only the, it's unexplainable why that day, but I drank that day. I know something happened that day, though. I picked up a drink and I drank again. I had two options that morning, and that the two options were to kill myself or drink alcohol. And my mind told me to go to the liquor store and I drank alcohol. And, I blacked out for 3 days, and when I came to 3 days later, the same condition, the same thing. I called and I asked for help that day. And on the 23rd of October of 2002, I was surrendered. Because my mom sent these two goofy guys from A&A to come pick me up. Good old A&A. And, that guy grabbed another guy, a new guy, which he later told me, we don't do 12-step calls alone. So I know that's why, right? And he grabbed this other guy who had 90 days sober, and he had a year sober, and he was on fire for AA. And the 90-day guy was older than dirt, dude. He was like he had a walker, dude. He was like, hey, I'm John, and I got 90 days sober. You know what I mean? Like, Alcoholics Anonymous didn't have what I wanted. I wasn't like, yay, hey, you know what I mean? Like, but that day those guys were like, come with me, kid. And I got in the car and I followed them. Right. That's how I know. Right. Like I just followed them. Like I didn't ask where we're going. I didn't ask questions. You know what I mean? There was no therapy. There was no psychiatry. There was none of that. Right. I sat down on a table with this guy and he opened the big book and he read word for word and he read line for line out of that book. For the first time in my life, someone read that book to me. Right. I mean, I would like to say I read it with them, but I couldn't even comprehend anything. You know what I mean? I didn't comprehend a word. It was like waka, waka, waka. You know what I mean? Bill Waka, you know, Bill's story. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, you know, I doctor's opinion. What? Why? Who cares? But he broke down some things in that book. He very much emphasized the physical allergy of this deal. He talked about when he drank, what happened to him. He talked about, I would go to the bar to drink one drink. And I thought to myself, as he told me that, I'm like, what's the point of that? Why would you want just one? You know, but I didn't say it. I thought it, you know what I mean? And he would say he would drink one just to go to the bar to get one. And a week later, he would come two. And I started to go, oh my God, right? He would tell me another story. He was just going to have a toast at his daughter's wedding, and he ruined the whole wedding. And a week later he came too. And I was like, oh my God. And he didn't even ask me anything about me. He just told me about him. And then I was like, man, this guy's selfish. He should let me talk, you know, because now I got some information about myself that I want to tell him because I've been relating. And eventually after he got tired, I think, he said, what happens to you when you drink? And I had all the information because I was looking at it, right? And so I told him this one time and this one time and this one time and this one time and this one time. And then he was just kind of like started writing. And then he got bored of my stories, you know, but he didn't say like, hey, okay, you know, he just let me just burn it out. And And I got to see like what happens to me when Pato drinks, right? Like I always get out of jail and I drink alcohol. And then I end up back in jail. And he said, man, Patty's like, the only time you're sober is when you're in jail. I'm like, well, yeah, pretty much. He said, then what happens in jail? I said, I don't know. I make a promise to my mom. I'm not going to drink. I'm not going to do drugs anymore. Mom, I promise. My good AA mom, 20 years sober AA mom. And then I would go to H&I and I would do the H&I meetings and I would do church and I was going to be sober guy. He goes, what happens? I go, I'm not going back to jail. That's for sure. He said, then what happened? I said, I don't know. I'm sitting in the holding room waiting to get released to get out of jail. And I have a conversation with myself. He said, a conversation with yourself. I'm like, yeah, but not like the guy on Skid Row, not like the dude that's like talking to himself. You know what I mean? I said to him, I go, you have the voices in your head too. You talk to? And he started laughing at me. He's like, oh, I got those voices. And he started telling me about his voices. And he would talk about how his the little voices that were that he had that convinced him that drinking was a good idea. And the rationalization, the justification, and the denial. And I was like, oh my God. I said, you know what, Jack? I said, you know, I've always thought that drugs were my problem. He said, really? What do you mean? I said, well, you know, crack cocaine ran me up into jail. Heroin ran me up into jail. Methamphetamine. And so I was just not going to do them, but I was going to drink alcohol. He said, what happened? I said, I would get out of jail. I would drink the beer. Because I wasn't going to drink tequila right away because that's hard alcohol. You just drink the beer so you could, you know, keep it going. And then eventually you get there. And he said, okay, so what happened? I said, well, I'm in the holding tank getting released. And I said, crack cocaine is my problem. I'm going to drink alcohol. I'm an alcoholic. And so I drink alcohol. And he said, what happened? I said, well, I'm down the street. I meet a new friend. You know, I don't know. Next thing you know, we're business partners. He said, what kind of business were you in? I said, well, drug dealing, you know, and he said, what happened? I said, I ended up back in jail. He said, oh, what happened that time? I said, oh, my mom, H&I, church, going to stay sober, getting released. Now I'm going to be sober when I'm in there, right? Everything, but about an hour before I get out, this drug's a problem. That drug's a problem. Alcohol's not your problem. And so I get out of jail. I drink the beer back doing those same things. Before you know it, I'm back in jail. You said you're back in jail again. I said, yeah, the only time I could stop Jack is when I'm back in jail. And he started to have me tell him all these thoughts that I had every time I got released and everything that happened. And every time I got out of jail, I picked up alcohol. And every time I picked up alcohol, I was back in jail. And he just laughed, man. He was laughing. Oh, Pat, you won't believe it. I said, what, Jack? He goes, man, you're not going to believe this, Pat. I said, what, Jack? He goes, oh, Pat. And he opened the book and on page 52 or 42, it says, we had to conceive both propositions. Physical, that when you put alcohol into your body, doesn't matter what happens after that. When you put alcohol into your body, you can't stop until you end up in jail. And more importantly, with a sober mind. You have a mind that's driving you back to the thing that's going to kill you. He said you might be alcoholic, Pat. And he just left me like that in that silence. You know what I mean? I was like, this is awkward. This is weird. Like, you know what I mean? Because he had laid out the facts from the big book, right? He read that big book. He emphasized the physical allergy. He emphasized the thinking that preceded the first drink. He laid it out in his experience, which then had me look at my experience. And I just said, Jack, I'm alcoholic. And I broke down and I started to cry. Started to bawl, cry, boo, shattered into a million pieces of that detox floor at Charlie Street. You know, my only topic this week is the problem, you know what I mean? But what Alcoholics Anonymous has done has put all the pieces back together. right? It's like a hot glue gun that's just pieced all the little pieces, right? I still have all those battle scars, right? I still have all those wounds. I still have all of that stuff. But Alcoholics Anonymous has put me back together. And guess what? All those battle scars and all those wounds and all that experience and all that brokenness has went from a liability to the greatest asset that I have. And that asset is that I'm able to give a little bit of those wounds and a little bit of that pain and a little bit of that to the next alcoholic walking through the door. Man, Alcoholics Anonymous is a lot more than just not drinking. Man, I've learned how to grow up in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was emotionally a freaking 5-year-old, Brian, when I got here. Well, some days I am today. But Alcoholics Anonymous, right? I've grown up here. You know what I mean? I've learned that it's okay to have a feeling here. Wow, that's pretty cool. You know, I don't have to drink over a feeling. You know what I mean? I get to have a feeling. I get to be sad today. I've been in a lot of situations where I've been sad. I've been in a lot of situations where I've been hurt. I've been in a lot of situations where I've been afraid, you know? And Alcoholics Anonymous, because admitting the problem, right, has given me a solution. Now, if I can't admit the problem, how am I going to be able to accept your solution? I came here all the time. My name is Pat and I'm an addict, and I separated myself from the solution you had because I was different from you. I was different from you. But as soon as I said that when I learned my condition and said, my name is Pat and I'm an alcoholic, I became one amongst you. And what a gift. The greatest gift is that I get to be amongst you today, right? I'm no longer alone today. I have a relationship with God today. I have a relationship with a lot of people in this world around me over here. And now I got a lot of new friends in front of me, right? And there's going to be a time when our paths cross, right? Like I met Alex D in the Zoom world and our paths crossed at Pacific Group last week. And we gave each other a hug, right? And it was like, man, it was like we'd known each other our whole lives. You know what I mean? It was like in the arms of each other, right? Like we'd known him my whole life, right? I see my friend Reggie and Chris, and I see my friends along, and that hug, and that means something special to me. Because when I got here, I was absolutely broken, and you've given me a solution today that I live my life by. So, Sherry, I thank you for asking me to participate in my recovery, and I love you all. Thank you very much.